Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you doing?
I have my voice back.
Yes, that's excellent. I actually think I'm about to start losing mine because my throat is hurting.
Well, that's what you get for going to Dragon Con.
I know, that's concrete. But I think I will survive. And at least this, by the time we get to the next episode, I'll probably have gotten better again, so no worries. Before we get started, I want to mention that you guys, please, if you get us on iTunes or Stitcher, please rate us and leave us reviews, subscribe to us. Those things really help us out, get us more listeners, and we really appreciate it. This week's episode is Krusty Gets Busted, episode 7G12, originally aired April 29th, 1990. Written by Jake Hogan and Wallace Wolodarski, and directed by Brad Bird. This is Brad Bird's first episode. He has famously gone on to help out with Pixar. He directed The Incredibles and Ratatouille. He directed The Iron Giant, which is probably my favorite film of his. He's also working on the new Disney film Tomorrowland, which I'm actually a little interested in. But this is his kind of his humble beginnings in The Simpsons. The chalkboard gag is, "They are laughing at me, not with me," which is something I still really haven't learned.
Well, with Bart, I feel like that's the kind of thing that he needs to learn, that no one is amused by his antics, even though they really are.
The couch gag is, Maggie is popped out and caught by Marge. This seems to be a recurring theme that for season. Pretty much almost every couch gag is just a family member being pushed off the couch. It's fine. The episode opens up with a big shot of Krusty's face. And before we jump into kind of plot details, I want to do a quick overview on Krusty. Matt Groening has gone on record in the commentary and in other places. He's based on a real life clown that was in Portland, Oregon, whose name was Rusty Nails,
which is just the best name for a TV clown. I mean, hey kids, go out and play with some Rusty Nails.
That is a terrifying name for a clown. Apparently, he was actually a very, very sweet, like, person in real life. But he had a share of a dairy company that was local. And I think that was part of... there's a core root of Krusty in there with that weird name and, like, kind of owning other things outside of, you know, typical merchandise. And they kind of just dialed that up to a million. I do also want to touch on that there's... a lot of people I've mentioned this to me after we've started the podcast, that Krusty's there was an initial idea that eventually Homer would turn out to be Krusty because they have the same base body type. I think that's interesting. And based also in that idea is that Bart doesn't respect Homer, but he respects Krusty, and that it's that weird dichotomy of, he loves the clown, but not his own father, and they kind of play that in that they turn out to be the same person. He actually respected his father all along, and all that. I don't even know if that was actually necessarily something they ever really planned on doing. I know it was an idea, but I don't think they quickly abandoned that. I think
I would hope so, because how would they explain how Homer was Krusty? Like, where would he find the time to go and be Krusty?
Yeah, exactly. And they cover that in a later episode where he actually becomes one of the imitation Krustys.
Which turns out to be a way better story than him actually being Krusty, to be honest.
Yeah. The first act starts with a big shot of Krusty's face, and then he drives through it on his little clown car. We see his show. I want to start off with a clip from the very beginning of the show where we get a call and response with Krusty and his audience. So we're going to start off with that.
Hey, kids, who do you love?
Krusty!
How much do you love me?
With all our hearts!
What would you do if I went off the air?
We kill ourselves!
So that is an amazing way to start this show. And Matt Groening even was surprised that they got away with the kids saying, "We'd kill ourselves."
Well, kids are very fickle. I'm sure they thought, oh, no one would actually do that, right?
Yeah, they even make a joke on the commentary, like, oh, we only lost a few kids from that. The other notable thing is about, this is the first time we've really seen any extensive length of Krusty's show, and he says, "I didn't do it." Which we later see that becomes Bart's famous catchphrase with the episode that parodies The Simpsons' success. I think it's really funny that they use that early on, and it's a clear callback in that later episode that I didn't remember.
I think a lot of people didn't remember, because until I watched this probably 3 or 4 years ago, I did not realize that either. I was like, holy crap, that used to be a Krusty thing?
Yeah, and they use that to full effect here with him, you know, framed for committing a crime. This is also the first we've seen Itchy and Scratchy before. I think this is the first time we've seen a full clip of it from with the intro and the full cartoon. Even the cartoon's only like 8 seconds long. We do get Marge already kind of disparaging the awful violence level of Itchy and Scratchy.
But it's only pretend violence, which actually sets a good example for us.
Yeah, and Lisa even makes the pointy comment, if cartoons were meant for adults, they'd put them on in prime time. Which, The Simpsons, this is again, in even this first season, they're already kind of poking fun at themselves. That, yeah, we're in prime time and we're meant for adults, quote unquote. Marge calls Homer, tells him he needs to get ice cream on the way home because Patty and Selma are coming over to show slides of their vacation. And this, I think that's the only thing that detracts from this episode, is that that is a very dated idea. If they were doing it nowadays, it would be, people wouldn't even do that. They just post everything on Facebook or some other social media site and just give you a link. That's showing the slides thing. I think it's kind of cute and quaint, honestly.
That's true. I mean, I don't feel like anyone's even had a slide projector in God knows how long, except in schools. They've been in school still to this day, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it dates the episode a little bit, unfortunately. But other than that, this episode could have aired almost any time in The Simpsons history. It's a very tight one. We get to Homer in the Quickie Mart. He's shopping. I think there's a cute moment where he goes, chocolate. No, double chocolate. Ooh, triple chocolate. And on the commentary, they mentioned that that was a ridiculous concept in 1990. But nowadays, triple chocolate is a flavor.
Well, triple chocolate, and I'm sure a million other flavors that have chocolate built into them.
Yeah, that's really funny to see that looking back now, how culture has, they were making fun of culture now, and now culture has caught up to The Simpsons. Homer is going through the Quickie Mart, and we see Krusty with a mask on. It's clearly, at least, someone that looks like very much like Krusty with a mask on. And there are subtle clues that every single thing they point out later in the episode, you can see right at this point. And I think that's it's
clever framing, because in most whodunits or whatever, there's always a detail you as the reader or the viewer don't get to see. But in this case, they literally put it all out there in front of you. So if you were watching really closely, you'd be thinking ahead. So it's really nice that they treat their viewers as someone who have solved this before Bart and Lisa do.
Yes. They give you the evidence even if you don't notice it. I know that the first time I watched it, I didn't notice any of that. But if you paid attention, you could see it before it happens. Homer's buying all his crap, and the Krusty imposter, well, it's to us, it's still Krusty. We don't know. I mean, Krusty comes up with the gun. Homer dives into Chips, which that's great. And Apu has several great lines in this sequence. You know, the quote unquote Krusty tells him to put his, you know, give him all the money and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yes, I do know the procedure for armed robbery. I work at a convenience store. He gives him all the money. Krusty leaves. And then he tells Homer, you can emerge now from my chips. The opportunity to prove yourself a hero is long gone.
That's true. I mean, honestly, Homer, a hero, get at it.
Yeah, and it's really funny because Apu is, this is the first time you see some character out of Apu. Later on down the line, he is, becomes a full-fledged supporting cast member. Right now, we've only know him as, hey, it's the dude in the Quickie Mart. But his condescending tone tells to Homer is really funny, and it kind of fleshes him out just a little bit. Homer rushes home, time enough to put the news on and basically break Bart's heart as it shows Krusty getting arrested. We are actually shown Krusty get arrested at his home. It's actually a little funny scene because he puts a whole bunch of liquor into a glass and then sprays a little bit of water. It's a nice little visual gag. Bart is crushed by the news. He actually says, he's my idol. I base my whole life on Krusty's teachings, which is funny enough as it is. You know, he bases life on a clown's quote-unquote teachings.
Well, I'm sure somewhere out there, there's somebody who has gathered together and watched all the Krusty episodes 400 times and has probably written a book on the Krusty the Clown philosophy.
And maybe recorded a podcast about it?
It's possible. I do have a book called Planet Simpson in which one of the, you know, 150-page chapters is about Krusty the Clown. So that's pretty close, actually.
I guess that's true. But we cut to Bart. He's in his room. It's like a blue tint to everything. It's sad music in the background. And he's just staring down. He stares at his poster and down at his little Krusty doll. And it's a really sad moment because he's pulling the string and it's the reciting all its little lines. And finally it says, "I didn't do it." And Bart says, "I wish I could believe you." And this is clearly bothering him. And I mean, you still get it to this day when an idol of yours does something that's disappointing to you. And I think even at this young age, it's even more impactful. It bothers you even that much more.
Well, because at that age, all of your idols have to be perfect. I mean, your parents obviously aren't because you're with them all the time, but your idols, you feel like they're the one person in the world who would understand you and the one person in the world who's perfect. And to a little kid to be let down like that for the very first time, it's got to be devastating. And we see that in Bart.
And that is the end of the, I guess, quote, first act. We jump into the second act, which, again, starts with a big face. Brad Bird is clear in the commentary that they did this on purpose to establish this motif of a big face. The first thing you see is a big face that is kind of sets the tone for that act. And the second act starts with Krusty's behind bars. And at this point, we kind of get a recap of Krusty's career up to this point. And this is the first time also that we kind of see Kent Brockman, which he becomes a stalwart of the series. He's basically a parody of the local newsman, aspires to be more than more Hollywood than he honestly is. And this is the first time we see him. He's kind of a creation, basically, of an amalgamation of a newscaster in L.A.
Really, you could go to any small town and see him.
Yeah, exactly. Any local news station, that's him. We get a recap of Krusty's career, and this is really interesting. This is one of my favorite segments of this episode is we get to see him kind of develop from his early days as a mime into being a full-fledged Krusty, building this empire, and they go over, this is the birth of all those Krusty products, which they lay on thick in this episode.
One of the interesting things about those parallels with the rise of Elvis, who is actually also from Tupelo, Mississippi. So I read in one of the books about Krusty that he was designed to have the same meteoric trajectory that Elvis had in his career. And they made him become from the same town just to, you know, give you a little push in that direction.
Yeah, I can totally see that. He gets through that bout of like being all flabby after his show gets canceled. And he has that comeback special that is a clear homage to the Elvis comeback special. They have him hawking pork products on air, and he has an on-air heart attack when he gets a pacemaker installed, which is they also seed a lot of the clues that end up proving him innocent in this segment, which is, it's very clever. I don't know if this was purposeful because they didn't mention it in the commentary. I haven't seen it anywhere else, but there have been multiple instances where show business people have had heart attacks on air and people did not realize that they were having heart attacks because they thought it was a joke.
Although in Krusty's case, it was pretty freaking obvious.
Yeah, I know. And Brad Bird even said that he himself animated some of those crazy faces that Krusty pulls in that segment, which are really wonderful. They're hilarious. He then goes on to champion child literacy, which, again, that's another little clue. They also mention his competition from the actual, that same news channel, which is Hobo Hank. Which I'd love to watch Hobo Hank's show and see what that was like.
That's got to be the most depressing kids show ever.
I don't know. Most of the clown shows that are, I mean, Bozo, it wasn't that different, honestly, than what I imagine a Hobo Hank show would look like.
That's true, and they were all terrible.
Well, when you're 5 years old, it doesn't matter what you put on. Kids have low expectations. I think it's also interesting that we kind of a segue to a scene where Reverend Lovejoy is disparaging Krusty because, you know, he was this idol and now he's getting his comeuppance. But Brockman mentions churches, synagogues, and mosques. He mentions all three, which is, I don't think you saw that on television in the 90s, especially mosques. Churches, sure. Synagogues, maybe. Mosques, I don't remember any other shows even mentioning anything aside from Christian-based faiths.
Well, that's true. Not to mention, obviously, Springfield is the most diverse city in America, because I'm pretty sure if they had one in the early 90s, that was one of, like, what, six?
Yeah.
That people openly acknowledged?
Yeah, exactly. There's also kind of an interesting discussion here where we see Sad Krusty. He's getting led to court.
Ow, cat!
It's got a cat. I got attacked by a kitty.
You have to leave that in the episode now, you realize. I've just been attacked by a kitty.
But Krusty does not have makeup on. And I think that they mentioned this, that at no point did they, I think they were going back and forth about, should he always have his makeup on? But I think every point after this episode, yes, he almost always has his makeup on, at least on his face.
And it's really interesting in the episode where he fakes his death, where he actually, I don't know if this is intentional or not, he puts real-looking makeup on top of his chalky makeup, so when he jumps off the boat and starts swimming away, the real makeup washes off.
Yeah,
and
so
he's left with his pale facade.
I think I don't know if that's supposed to be implying that he actually looks like that under the makeup. His pale makeup is his real, but then I don't think we're supposed to think about it too hard. So they're in court. Homer points out Krusty explicitly that he was the one who did it. And at this point, Donomy, they have still not mentioned Krusty's real name.
Do they say his name at all in this episode?
No, that's what I don't think they say Herschel J. Krestovsky at any point in this episode. I think we don't get that until we get one of the later one where we explore his, you know, Judaism and his father. If we are wrong, please, listeners, let us know.
Well, I wonder if they intended Krusty to be Jewish all along, because the pork product joke is funny, but it's not like super funny until you realize he's Jewish. So were they planning that from the beginning? I've never heard anyone say.
I haven't heard it either. We jump to a town burning of all the Krusty products, which is actually a genuinely kind of creepy scene.
Well, we had a lot of town burnings back in the 80s. Don't you remember? Every time some celebrity got in trouble, we burned all their things. I, for one, had so many of my toys burned because of public outrage of the horrible, horrible things like the Ninja Turtles or the Thundercats. Those were all horrible influences as children and had to be burned.
I think they allude to this that in multiple episodes that ruled by the mob mentality. I think they hit it again in a few in later episodes as well. But basically, I mean, the mob rules. We saw in Telltale Head. We see it here again. March versus the Monorail, the Whacking Day episode. I think, yeah, Springfield is ruled by the mob. And we have Rev and Lovejoy, like, speaking to them. Everyone's humming the Battle Hymn of the Republic. They ignite this giant pyre, and everyone's like, ooh. They're not scared. They are enthusiastic, and it's quite terrifying.
Well, my favorite guy is the guy who's selling crusty material just so people can burn it. That would be me.
That's the smart guy. Buy it and burn it. We go back to court. We find out Krusty can't read, and eventually he is found guilty. And then I know that the third act starts the way that Brad Bird imagined it. It starts with Sideshow Bob's big head. It transitioned. It basically said, "Hey, this is what now is the norm." Is Sideshow Bob, and we get Kelsey Grammer first time. Giving Sideshow Bob his voice.
Really, how they got Kelsey Grammer in their first season, I will never know, because he was really famous at this point from Cheers, and actually, I'm not sure, had Frasier started up by now?
Frasier had not started at this point, but he was on Cheers, and Cheers was very successful. So I imagine that he saw the show and saw that it was high quality, and, you know, I don't know if he had any lead-in time to see if any episodes finished by this point, but Kelsey Grammer, when you think Sideshow Bob, you think that voice, and it's kind of based on a very simple thing. Like Sideshow Bob talks, like he'd only talked up to this point with a slide whistle, and then he finally talks, and he has this deep, sonorous, like Shakespearean voice of Kelsey Grammer, and it's a very simple kind of gag, but it ends up like becoming his identity as this kind of evil, sinister character, and it.
An evil
wonderful
mastermind, if you will.
Yes, evil mastermind. He's aside from Mr. Burns, he is the enemy du jour of The Simpsons. We see a bit of the show. He is reading from The Man in the Iron Mask, And he plays, he sings some Cole Porter to end the show. And it's in kind of direct contradiction to what Krusty's show was, which was like, there's several other clips during the show where he is clearly showing punching Sideshow Bob in the face, shooting him out of cannon. I mean, it's very lowbrow, really dumb stuff. I think that, and all the kids are still love it. They still love, which I, it's, that's kind of debatable if kids would actually enjoy this guy just sitting in a big chair and reading Man in the Iron Mask. Man in the Iron Mask is a fine novel, but I don't know if elementary school children would like it.
I don't know. The way he read it, man, it sounded interesting to me.
Well, it's, I guess if you had someone who sounded like Kelsey Grammer reading Man in the Iron Mask, it certainly would add some gravitas to the situation. Some gravitas. Bart is upset that Lisa and Maggie are watching this, and she is, she basically, like, he turns it off, and she is, like, trying to tell him, come on, you don't, you need to understand, Krusty is guilty of this, you need to just come to reality. And actually, I, this whole sequence is really wonderful, and we're gonna play it for you.
Face the facts. All those hours we spent staring at Krusty, we were staring at a crook.
Look, Lisa, I know Krusty's innocent. Don't ask me why. It's just a feeling I have.
Oh, Bart.
Come on, Lisa. I think I can prove Krusty's innocent, but I need your help.
You do? Why?
Well, come on, Lisa. You know why.
No, why?
I'll never forgive you for making me say this, but you're smarter than me. So, are you with me?
Yeah, man.
That is a really great moment. And I, have we seen a Lisa and Bart kind of, they have they teamed up a little bit in Bart the General? Have we seen them doing a, like a real official team up yet?
I do believe this is the first time that I can think of. Yeah, they will in the next episode, but this is really the first time you see them ally for the greater good.
Yeah, and having Bart having to admit that she's smarter than him was hilarious to me, because I remember doing, like, you have to, I had a sibling and I wanted her help to do things. I had to kowtow to her and say, you know, blah, 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 and blah, 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 and, you know, like, try and just schmooze her over. And she obviously saw through it, but just hearing me say those words was usually enough. From that, we get, like, almost like a crime scene investigation scene with both Bart and Lisa going to the Quickie Mart and kind of examining everything every step of the way. And Apu is obviously, he's kind of very defensive because, you know, he's kind of, but we see them highlight the microwave, which, you know, does not allow pacemaker nearby, which Krusty has. We see, you know, them, Krusty reading a magazine, which he can't read. Yeah, so they point out that both the pacemaker and the magazine, and then try and think if they have any enemies. At this point, we cut back to Sideshow Bob, and he's, you know, he's being walked by a producer signing some autographs for some kids. The producer's saying, yo, we're so successful, blah, 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 blah. Sideshow Bob is, you know, given, basically glad-handing him. And then we get him where he starts lamenting Krusty not being there. And he starts crying, closes the door to his dressing room, and it's just a beautiful, wonderful, it's animated so perfectly because obviously Kelsey Grammer's performance sells it, but the animation paired with it makes it basically the birth of the villain. And he basically laughs, and he starts laughing this maniacal, terrible. Jesus. All right. There. Okay. Matt is apparently going to be Sideshow Bob for next season. And at this point we realize something's up. Sideshow Bob. I really wish I could watch this kind of with the knowledge of him actually being the culprit the whole time. Because it's hard to watch it knowing that he's the one. And I'm trying to imagine if the first time I saw this, if I realized, at what point did I realize that Bob was the one who did it?
Probably at that point, to be fair.
Yeah, I'm not. It's at that point you're like, yeah, this is fishy. Bart and Lisa go to find Bob because they think, well, who would know better than if Krusty had any enemies than Bob? And so they go and to his dressing room, and we see his big giant feet. This is very important because it's a very important shot to establish the size of his feet, because he doesn't have any time, so they're whisked away to the taping of the show. They do a similar intro to what Krusty did without the the children screaming, we'd go kill ourselves. I caught that, but I never had known this before, but Bob's name of his show is The Cavalcade of Whimsy, which I love that.
Sounds like a Victorian freak show.
I love it so much. Cavalcade of Whimsy. I think we're going to retitle our podcast, Matt. It's going to be The Cavalcade of Whimsy.
Does that mean you have to speak in a Kelsey Grammer voice the entire time?
I think if we do that, you have to do that. So it's a win-win. Bob notices that Bart is upset. And Bart, you know, he's like, at first he's hesitant to go on stage, but, you know, Bob leads him on stage, and they have this very kind of like a parody of Donahue, which was a talk show at the time. Strangely enough, that's kind of vanished in history. You know, Bob's basically, you know, he's kind of telling, Bart's trying to lay out their case of all this evidence they found that it couldn't be him. Bob says something that triggers something in Bart's brain and makes him realize that Bob is the one that did it. And this is going to be a little bit of a long clip, but it's a really great one, so I want to air it all.
I admit I have some mighty big shoes to fill. Big but if shoes you give me to a fill. Chance, I promise big you shoes to fill. Big 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 shoes to fill. In ancient Greece, there was a school of thought called Stoicism.
Wait a minute! You did it!
Excuse me?
Attention, fellow children! Krusty didn't rob that store. Sideshow Bob framed him, and I got proof.
Fuck you, lousy, stupid, clumsy!
See that? Krusty wore big floppy shoes, but he's got little feet, like all good-hearted people. Sideshow Bob really fills his shoes with thin, ugly things.
So yeah, that is a great sequence, and the animation even sells it more because it shows these neon outlines of feet floating through the air into Bob's mouth, which is a little clever gag because he's literally putting his big feet in his mouth. When you think about it, this isn't really, it's generally pretty weak evidence. I mean, it's good enough evidence that Krusty isn't the one who committed the crime, but there's a lot of people with big feet. I don't necessarily think that would be enough to convict Bob, but then he basically confesses in front of everyone.
Yeah, honestly, it's extremely circumstantial. So if he had just kept his mouth shut, he would have had a good chance of them saying, well, we think it's you, but no jury would convict you.
Yeah, we can't prove it. Bob is being hauled off to jail. Bart says, take him away, boys, which we see that later on in later Bob episodes, which I'd forgotten about that we had seen this first in this episode, and it's a total Scooby-Doo ending with Bob even saying, I would have gotten away with it if it weren't for those meddling kids. He's, you know, he's screaming that children treat kids as equals. They're just as smart as us, and they could catch me, and they'll get you too, and stuff like that.
Which, to be honest, is a very recurring theme throughout many seasons ago.
He vows revenge on Bart, which ends, you know, up with probably one of the best reoccurring characters in the show. Especially for like the one time a season kind of deal, Bob is one of the best guest stars.
Well, honestly, in this episode, we get three of pretty much the best guest, minor characters ever. You get Sideshow Bob, you get Krusty the Clown, you get Police Chief William Ford, Kent Brockman. You know, the four of the most amazing side characters ever are all right here in this episode.
Yeah, they, I think they really hadn't identified they hadn't really gone the Edward G. Robinson route completely with Wiggum yet, which they later would. They'd really kind of emphasize kind of that the voice that Hank Azaria does and the fact that he's kind of piggish and that he's a cop. But they don't really explore much of that until later on in the show. But Krusty, a lot of the groundwork for him is laid here. And Krusty is my favorite supporting character. And this show really establishes the kind of the layers and depths that Krusty even like is starting to develop, and they get to later in later episodes. I forgot how good this episode was. And Krusty is set free, and the episode ends with Bart having a framed picture of, well, not a frame, but a picture of him and Krusty on the wall, signed in a scrawling Krusty pen, which it's actually the same as it is in the same episode, which he fakes his death.
And looks suspiciously like Homer's handwriting as well.
Nah, there you go. Another little, I think they never went with that, but they certainly alluded to the similarities a lot of the time. And we it pans out, and his whole room is filled with Krusty merch again. His parents, Homer and Marge, I don't know if Krusty gave him all that stuff or if Homer and Marge realized that they were wrong and bought up all that stuff again, but it is full of Krusty merch.
It's true. Maybe they have a hidden room in the house where they keep all their old merchandise.
Anything else you want to touch on before we get to our listener questions?
Actually, I did have one thing. I would like to say that the sound design of this episode is honestly fantastic. When Bart is super sad in the blue in his room, when it's all blue in the background, the sound there is great. The background music throughout the episode fits it so perfectly, especially when Krusty is walking up the steps. You just get this heartrending tune in the background, and just throughout it, the sound design just it's better than any show at any primetime show at the time had any right to be. I mean, I'm surprised the technology to be this good existed at that point.
It's not the Stone Ages, man. It's only it's the early 90s. They have had television at that point for 30 years.
True, but go back and watch all the sitcoms and the primetime shows from the early 90s.
Well,
they're all pretty bad.
I think we're establishing. I think that's the main. If there's one thing that we're, I think we're gonna, we're gonna probably have a little bit longer discussion about this next week, as it's the last episode of the first season, about first season as a whole. But I think what the Simpsons are doing is basically saying we are not. This is what television has been. We are not that. We are in direct opposition to that.
It's funny. I feel like television has had a steady rise, especially over the last decade or so, in the quality of writing and the quality of production. And I want to say that The Simpsons, especially in quality of writing and directing, was a huge jump that made people realize, hey, TV can be better than just stupid crap.
This was an amazing episode to rewatch. Every time I just rewatching all these episodes makes me realize how good they are, and this one in particular. And we will rank it in best episode ever, right after our listener question of the week. Listener question this week was our favorite Simpsons house guest and why. And like always, you guys came through with amazing responses. I wish I had all the time to read all of them. On Facebook, first we're going to hit up Thomas. There's nothing quite as endearing as when Krusty comes to the Simpsons house. When he stayed with them after the looming threat of Gabbo and Krusty gets canceled, to provide some of his best moments, allowed the audience to see his true motivations, including his jealousy of other people's success. Also helps that Bart's endless enthusiasm to help Krusty is an endearing trademark of the series. He refuses to see his idol as anything less than a manic performer, helps break the fourth wall about celebrities being damaged people nicely, and has paved the way for such excellent visits as when he discovers his religion in Like Father, Like Clown, or has Jay Leno and a monkey give him a bath in The Last Temptation of Krust, which I just stumbled across that screen grab of that, of Homer barging in on, I had no idea you, Jay Leno, and a monkey were giving Krusty a bath. Next, also from Facebook, is Matt, Cooter and Spud from Bart Carney. The immortal Jim Varney as Cooter the Carney, Spud unhinging all his joints to impress Lisa. The sound effects are perfect. Homer being oblivious on how to bribe Wiggum, Cooter's cigarette trick, epic ring toss, bamboozle, and of course, Homer trying to fix his butt groove at the end. The Cooters may not be ideal house guests, but it is a great episode. And Jim Varney, yeah, that is a great one. And I had almost forgotten. Like, I just forget that these, like, I say house guests, I did not even have that one in mind. And then, oh yeah, when they took over this, yeah. On Twitter, we have K3K, at Catherine Dirks, Sherry Bobbins, former fiance of Groundskeeper Willie. She taught me how to cut every corner, so I have more time for play. Love Sherry Bobbins. Jessica, at Aspiring Cat, Otto when he's suspended until he gets his license and wears his own underwear because he's the only palindromic house guest. And Kurt, at Kurt Bros, or Bras, best house guest, Cooter and Spud because Carney's and Jim Varney, plus Homer outsmarts someone. So we got Cooter and Spud was a very popular one. Also, Mike, at a Mike Bloom type, have to go with a poo who inspires a song and seemingly wraps up things much quicker than usual. On Reddit, we have Unky Herb from Hey, It's Enrico Palazzo. Otto, remember when I dropped my keys and you thought the phone was ringing? And finally, JS Clunk. This had the most upvotes, so I felt like I had to include it. Roy. And that's it. So, Matt, who's your favorite Simpsons house guest?
Well, real quick question. Do elephants count as house guests?
I think we have to go for people.
Oh,
not,
people.
Not animals. Because well, that will be a different listener question.
Oh, okay. In that case, I'm going to have to go with Apu as well, because I really enjoy the songs that are always in The Simpsons. I feel like they're always spectacularly written and performed, and Apu's song, Who Needs the Quickie Mart, still brings a huge smile to my face when I hear it every single time.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I don't think there's really not, in most of these questions, there are no wrong answers. For me, Sherry Bobbins. I love that the parody of Mary Poppins. I love that it's one of those kind of little meta examinations of The Simpsons that this like almost perfect woman can't rehabilitate them, that they're just still awful. Like she helps when she's there, but as soon as she leaves, they're terrible again. Again, I love the music in that episode. It's great. And I think that the fact that both of us identify our answer to that so closely to the music is really kind of an example of how the music in The Simpsons becomes almost as important as anything else in it.
I would also like to have a quick shout out to Larry Burns, Rodney Dangerfield as a very close second.
We got several answers for Larry Burns as well, which Rodney Dangerfield, I'm glad they got him on the show before he passed, because like he's a comedic legend. He deserved to be kind of captured. And the fact that he doesn't voice himself, he voices a character. I think, again, very. Our listener question this week, I think, is a pretty obvious one, and I think it's a great one. What's your favorite Sideshow Bob episode, and why? There's a lot of them out there. I already know mine. I know my answer, no debate. But I know some people will have, I'm sure there'll be some variations, because there's so many good ones. Of course, I'm going to post this question on all our social media. You can reach us there on Twitter. We're at Simpsons Show Pod. Facebook, The Simpsons Show Pod, you know, facebook.com / The Simpsons Show Pod. Email, simpsonsshowpod@gmail.com. Please email us as well. Love to see them. Again, you can get us on iTunes and Stitcher. As I mentioned before, please review and subscribe. Give us a rating. It really helps us out. And now, we're going to go to this last segment of every show, the segment we call Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
In this segment, we rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically. Right now, our number one episode is Bart the General, and pulling up the rear is Homer's Odyssey. Now, Matt, I've thought about this a lot during this week, ever since I watched this episode. Does this unseat Bart the General for you?
Honestly, I would have to say absolutely. When I was rewatching it again today, there really was no doubt in my mind. It follows along the same lines as Bart the General. It's got a lot of character development. It's got allusions, especially to things that people who tend to watch primetime TV wouldn't necessarily be exposed to. I mean, the Man in the Iron Mask, honestly, when has somebody who's sitting down to watch TV 8 o'clock every night ever read The Man in the Iron Mask? Between that and Stoicism, I mean,
yeah,
they're both great allusions, and just all in all, it's a great episode.
Yeah, Bob gives the writers a good excuse to insert very highbrow references, which I generally welcome in my animated sitcoms. I agree with you. This, I was thinking hard on it. This is I think it's more entertaining episode than Bart the General, but it's better in its construction. It is very tight. It wastes no time getting to what the episode is about. It is packed full of jokes and memorable lines. I try and limit kind of our clips to three an episode, because I don't want just us airing the entire episode on audio form, but it made it hard. There are several times where I wasn't sure what clips we should show in this, because it is a really great episode. And frankly, I could put this one against probably most episodes from the series, and it would do well. So I think that's official. We have a new number one. For now, Krusty Gets Busted is the best episode ever. And frankly, I think it's going to last at least through the first season. I don't think Some Enchanted Evening is going to unseat it.
Considering Some Enchanted Evening was like the second or third episode they produced, you're probably right.
It's actually 7G01, so it's the first one.
That's right. That's what I was trying to remember.
Yeah, so next week we are doing Some Enchanted Evening. It is the last episode of Season 1. Hey, Matt, we're almost there. Almost the end of Season 1.
Woo!
There you go. Some enthusiasm for you folks. We are probably going to do a little round. I don't know. I imagine we're just at the end. Next week, we're going to do a little roundup of the first season. I don't think it's worthy of its own episode, you know, a review or whatever. But I think with that, we'll bring this episode to a close. Before we go, you can find me on Twitter if you want to follow the things, all the stuff I get up to online. At Mixmaster Serial. It's MixmasterCereal. Quite a mouthful. I know Matt does not participate in social media, so you won't find him anywhere.
That's true. You can't stay off my lawn.
And with that, we'll call it a day. I am Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching The Simpsons.